is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. Gotcha, you lead us, gotcha, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, if you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
Welcome back, if you can hear me and us, to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast as we edge closer to the magic century mark. Myself, Stuart Court, is as ever joined by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I am doing ever so well, thank you. I've had a good few days after the shite of Sunday, but all is well. I feel very good.
Yeah, if expletives were allowed on podcast titles, that might be the name of this week's episode, to be honest. yeah, I don't want to have it all taken down from everywhere. So Seahawks are, this week we're going to cover everything that happened at CenturyLink Field on a rainy and wet Sunday afternoon in the Pacific Northwest against Teddy Bridgewater, Alvin Kamara and New Orleans Saints before looking ahead to Arizona back in that cursed stadium down in Glendale in Arizona. So yeah, on this past Sunday though, the Saints rolled into town without the linchpin for so many years, Drew Brees, who was, I think he was in California resting after his thumb ligament surgery, which sounds particularly painful, and the Seahawks laid an absolute egg, Adam, losing 33-27.
Yeah, I didn't even think that this was like a possible. I didn't think that a loss was even close to being on the radar here. Like, I was working on Sunday night, I was catering a wedding, and the time was ticking through, and you know, checked a bit of fantasy, and so, oh, the Seahawks are playing now. But normally before games, I'm thinking, oh, yeah, not sure about this. But, you know, the week before I was working as well, and when we had the Steelers on the road, and I'd kind of written it off as, you know, I just assumed we weren't going to play particularly well and we'd lose, but we won, so whatever. And then obviously Drew Brees is out, and I didn't even entertain the thought that we could lose this week. I don't know about you, but yeah, like this is like for me one of the more shocking defeats that any team will have all season, to be honest.
Yeah, I think Will Cornell, who's been on the pod, does all the Rain City stuff. He tweeted almost simultaneously to me. I had a bad feeling about this game. And I think it started the moment I saw the quote from Sean Payton saying, I think by the Seattle media, when he was asked about Teddy starting, he goes, who said Teddy starting? And they're like, oh, here we go. one of my friends is a Falcons fan. He texts me Sunday evening saying, this is a game where Sean Payton's just going to win, throw everything at you and somehow escape with a win. And even saying that, like, I don't know why, but as the week wore on, it kind of seemed more and more likely. And then you hear everything that come out after the game and all the cliches that come from certain people in the Seahawks organization, you kind of think, yeah, if you'd have said that before the game, I'd probably would have heavily backed the Saints, because it just seemed it's the most Sean Payton thing to do. Because, like, but saying that, it really was all down to one player and how seemingly unprepared they were for Alvin Kamara, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, that does seem, I mean, it's pretty piss poor when you hear your head coach saying, I didn't realise he was that good. Like, I don't think you need to watch that much tape to realise that Alvin Kamara is fucking excellent.
Yeah, because, I mean, what is it, his third year?
Yeah.
Because it was him and it was Ingram, then it was him, he's like a third, fourth round player. So, I mean, there's a reason they got to the championship game, and while Drew Brees was Drew Brees, the main reason they got there was because of the guy from Tennessee. And it's just, I don't know, there's a deeper, like, you don't want to be too haphazard with overreact, as other people may do, instantly, and drag down every member of the team and fan base on their way to just whatever, some semblance of sanity. But it's just, it's another notch on the bedpost of this team seemingly being undercooked for the most part. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, it's not often that you would accuse like the team of being underprepared. I mean, it does happen, and they have some weird games like against Arizona in the past at home. Like, they always have like an egg that they drop, and Washington a couple of years ago. But I don't know. Like, it was funny when people were saying that, you know, Carroll spent the whole game like he should have been in the concussion protocol after being hit by Cody Barton, and that everything he did kind of, yeah, it was like he was punch drunk. It's just indicative of an overall kind of strange malaise that was on the game in total, really, wasn't there?
Yeah, but it's the third game, and really, if you could point to a thing over all three games where it's this, that kind of sleepwalking has kind of come into the fold. Because obviously last week in Pittsburgh, although they won, they only won when they changed the game plan up and Russell Wilson got the ball out before he blinked. To help, because I think there's a stat where he was sacked 5 times in the first 22 minutes and then wasn't sacked for the other 36 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So that first 25 minutes could have completely curtailed and sunk that game in Pittsburgh, although what happened on the opposite side they may have aided our course somewhat. But they sleptwalked 50 minutes of this week's game, didn't they?
Yeah, I guess the whole thing is, can you win a game in the shite quarter? But ultimately, as we've said before in the podcast, eventually, like, that does come and bite you in the ass, and you will lose a game that you should probably win because of something just like that. And I think, unfortunately, this is one of those prime examples. Like, they only really pulled their fingers out their asses in the last quarter, scored 3 touchdowns. And I think it was 3, wasn't it? Wilson got 2, and then there was 1 to Disley. And, you know, like, they only lost by 6 points in the end.
It was not a 6-point game.
It wasn't a 6-point game, but, ultimately, if they'd played properly, they probably could have covered the spread quite comfortably, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, Pete Carroll was right when he pointed out, I think he pointed out maybe on Monday morning or Monday afternoon, where he said, we got the ball first, we have a penalty, nothing, punt the ball and they return for a touchdown 7-0 without even like taking your seat, which is fair enough. But that also at the same time comes back to being just completely undercooked and unprepared, which is not something you could, as you say, could put on this team and this coaching staff and that head coach for the better part of the decade he's been in control. I mean, if it is just a one-time thing and they roll down the desert this week and put a beating on Kyler Murray and Double K Cliff Kingsbury, then it would be somewhat forgotten until playoff, if that comes to it, playoff tiebreakers and all that come into it at the back end of the season. But it seems likelier that this is going to be a thread throughout the season, doesn't it?
I mean, do you think this team that we support is capable of putting a beat down on someone?
No. We'll get into it in a bit, but there's a move the team have made this week, which plays into the fact that they're searching for like a juice to the team. Obviously, Bobby Wagner's Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson's Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett appears to not be waylaid anything by the absence of Doug Baldwin, which is after Russell Wilson's probably the biggest bright spot on the offensive side of the ball through 3 weeks. But there's defensively, there's just not that juice. I mean, we've been in that stadium where you hear, is it Rick Ross, and that ain't hold me back. I'm not going to use the other word in that song title. But you see Richard Sherman, you see Cam, you see KJ, you see Bobby, you see Frank Clark just dancing and jumping around and getting the crowd on their side. There just doesn't seem to be any juice, there doesn't seem to be any energy, especially on that defensive side of the ball. And while there is Bobby Wagner, it's kind of him and KJ to a certain extent, and then a lot of other things. There doesn't seem to be a cohesion, which is probably too expected what's happened on the turnover on that side of the ball, Adam.
Yeah, I've seen the fans getting a little bit of stick, actually. And I wonder what you thought about that on Sunday in terms of, like, just a bit of lack of energy. I mean, I think a lot of sports are finding now that fans are becoming less tribal and it's a bit more touristy. You know, we see it in the Premier League all the time. But what do you make of the idea that the fans kind of aren't being the 12th man that they're so vaunted to be? And, you know, obviously it doesn't help that before you even get a play on defense, they've run a punt back in 167 yards for a touchdown. Yeah, what would you make of that? Because, you know, it's, as you say, we've been in that building beforehand and the palpable difference it's made, well, it's obvious.
Yeah, and I do think from... I do think for the first two and a half quarters that was kind of the thing. But I think as soon as the field goal was missed, and then it didn't really matter because Al Woods was lined up over the centre by half an inch or whatever it was, and then they scored from the 1 yard line. That kind of took all life out of it. And when a team who has shown no signs of life for the better part of 2.5 hours, it kind of understand. But there wasn't any marked difference. I think last year was more of an issue with the crowd, but also at the same time, the Saints are one of the few teams who travel well. I think. I mean, I went to the game when they were at Wembley, and it's just there's people from New Orleans all over the place, like it was last year for us in London. But I think, I think that was kind of just a bit of a weird cocktail. But no, there was nothing. Nothing watching it, and obviously watching it this year is a bit more stress-free than it was last year. So I watched most of the games while supposedly working. I'm not doing that this year. But yeah, there wasn't any marked difference that I could pick up on storyline or whatever. It's kind of passed me by somewhat.
Fair enough. And it's funny you mentioned Tyler Lockett. I said to you before the podcast I had a question to ask you. And I just wonder about Tyler Lockett. Obviously, he's making catches, but I don't... What is he? Is he a number one receiver? Because, and you know, DK Metcalf, they're going to line up on the left. He's going to run a go route every single time, and sometimes he's going to catch it, and more often than not, he's not, because it's going to be too easy to defend him by a good player. And then you got Tyler Lockett, who is, in fairness against Pittsburgh, you know, brought in, I think, 11 catches. Yeah, then against the Bengals, had one catch, and...
Yeah, he had 11. He had 10 against the Steelers. He had 11 against the Saints.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of, I don't know, his whip. How many yards did he have for those 11 catches? On fair enough. Yeah, I mean that.
He got double the targets compared to anyone else. Disley was second with 7.
That's fair. I don't know if he still strikes me as someone that's kind of more of a chain mover than like a splashy. I just feel we're missing like a splash player on the offense with Wilson. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you got
Carson, who is good, and we said he is good, and that's probably it. And obviously the fumble issues are going to be problematic. And then I kind of feel like you could slow down Metcalf with a bit of safety help over the top, and you know roughly what he's going to do. And ultimately, the more take there is on him, I imagine the more he's going to have to do to try and get open, because it's going to be fairly clear what he's going to do. And I just wonder if Lockett's got enough juice to carry the rest of it.
The way that so many, we see people on Twitter and Facebook want this team to play all the play action stuff, the player who's going to benefit most from that is Tyler Lockett. And so if the team are going to move to that and are going to follow the numbers, as it were, the Tyler Lockett is going to be a massive part of this offense going forward. But like when you say, I don't think it's what you mean, but when you say wide receiver, number one wide receiver, you have like the prototypical Megatron,
yeah.
Julio Jones, Nuk Hopkins, but it just doesn't seem to be a way, unless DK Metcalf is legitimately what his body type and he was lauded to be. I think Tyler Lockett has taken on way more of the Doug Baldwin mantle than we could probably expect and probably would want from this team at the receiver position. Obviously, we've seen a few question marks about draft picks from this year over the last 36 hours or so, but I think Tyler Lockett has moved into the slot, quite literally vacated by Doug Baldwin, and it's up to a DK Metcalf or a David Moore. We only had one target or two targets, one catch on Sunday with 29 yards. So if he can start doing that, you got Metcalf and Tyler Lockett's going to ascend. Tyler Lockett's always going to get the lion's share of targets and catches, I think. It's just how they see the wide receiver one and how they see so many things on the offensive side of the ball. This coaching staff is completely the ante of what the majority of NFL teams.
I mean, can you see DK Metcalf having 50 catches?
I don't know, but it's just, I mean, that catch at the end of the first half is just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, the biggest thing that I think Ben Baldwin or someone, maybe even Alistair Corp has pointed out, it shows how, because when he's, the way he is in the field, he shouldn't be there. He's just started doing the scramble drill because Russell Wilson's moved about. The fact that he's doing that in week three is possibly more encouraging for his upswing than the catch itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. It's all about, you know, as we said with Stephen Nisbet a couple of weeks ago about AB, like that relationship between receiver and quarterback when the play breaks down is absolutely crucial.
But at the same time, we have had those banner players in messes, Jimmy Graham, and Jimmy Graham's probably the biggest example of that number one, that flashy player, and just Twitter search and Facebook search his name on game days, and it's like he shat the bed for three years, isn't it?
Yeah. I think when you see, and I know we shouldn't do this, but when you're watching Red Zone at the same time as other, as you're watching the Seahawks, yeah, like there's no one in the team that can catch a slant and take it 70 yards to the house.
No, there isn't, but I'm pretty certain the Chiefs have collected all of those types of players.
Or your Odell Beckham against the Jets, I guess. But I don't know, there never seems to be anyone that's going to, a 50-yard play on the ground is just, I know they're rare anyway, but it seems like it's almost out of the question for a Seahawks player to do something like that. And I don't know, I just wonder if we're almost going to become the offense that our defense wants to play against, if that makes sense. Like the whole, like we're almost at the epitome of a bend but don't break offense for a defense.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, because I think I tweeted or messaged you on Sunday, like this offense without Wilson is unwatchable. it's funny, but it would not be funny because this is ridiculous, the things he's doing. He's getting these, because like we said, this wasn't a 6-point game, but the main reason it was a 6-point game is because of the things Russell Wilson. He ran in two touchdowns, and he hasn't done that in years, probably, without looking at it. He's just, he ate me 32-50, 406, two passing, and then 51 on the ground, and the two, within the 5 yards, I think it was, touchdowns. It's just, I think your point about wide receiver one is highlighted by the sheer gap in how good Russell Wilson is compared to everyone else in this offensive side.
And yet there's people that still think the team can't work if they use him too often.
It's like, he threw it 50 times, which is not ideal. I think it was. If it isn't, it's pretty close to his career high for attempts. But give him, what, 2.5 more minutes in that first half? And the Seahawks, as you say, are probably going to sneak out of a win just because of how good Russell Wilson is. And it's just, it's ridiculous, and it's going to be the appreciation for these players, as we mentioned with other people who departed, like Messi, Sherman and Thomas on the other side of the ball, the appreciation needs to be realised with Russell Wilson, because that gap is ain't half widening.
Yeah, 100%.
Other bright spot of the offense is Will Disley, Adam. Another touchdown after, was it a two touchdown day in Pittsburgh? He's only played like 7 games in his NFL career, and he has 5 touchdowns. I mean, that's not a bad strike rate, but it's also where on the field he's getting them. I mean, all of them within the fifth in the red zone. I mean, there was it 8 for 9 in the red zone on offensive side of the ball. So while it wasn't great, there is some promising signs if everything else, every other aspect catches up. And Will Disley is one of those things which is above a lot of other things, Adam.
Yeah, he's been a real bright spark. And I guess, obviously, with the news of Nick Vanette being traded off for a fifth to Pittsburgh, you know, Disley is now someone that they're going to be counting on to a, you know, Zach Miller, Luke Wilson level, I would imagine, from the past, because he's, you know, he's having that kind of impact.
Yeah, I mean, from the Husky, I mean, he played tight end, was it his final year at Montlake, and he played tight end?
Yeah, I think it was.
I mean, he had a defensive line number, which is weird, but luckily they don't allow that in the NFL. but elsewhere, obviously the main other thing on the offensive side of the ball, Adam, was Chris Carson, 15 carries, 52, but he added to his collection of fumbles, and it's somewhat of an issue when, obviously, Rashard Penny missed the game on Sunday with a hamstring injury, which seems like, well, then he should sit him out of that game against the Saints. He should be back this week against Arizona, but it's an issue when, especially when that fumble turned into 7 points instantly, Adam.
This is a problem.
Yeah.
Like, the whole offense is built around him. I mean, to the point where they wanted him to be there to get extra, you know, extra targets as a running back in the passing game as well. Like, the whole offense has been predicated on the fact that he would have a good season, really. And thus far, is that 4 fumbles in 3 games? 3 of them were lost?
I think it's 4. He's lost all 4, isn't he?
You might be right, actually. But, I mean, he is, like, one fumble in the next fortnight away from being benched, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, he was effectively sat for a large chunk of that game. I mean, CJ Procise, although he touched the ball 9 times, he was in on every play, which is, I mean, that 50 attempts from Russell Wilson, a big part of that was not just scoreboard, it was the fact that Chris Carson was, like, nuclear at times during that game, because, I mean, it was a pretty good play by Von Bell, I think it was, for the Saints, but it's a good play in, like a short space of time, not when you add in what he's done over the first 3 weeks of seasons. Yeah, it's a massive issue, a massive problem. The door is somewhat ajar for Rashard Penny to get more opportunities, and that's kind of what he needs, you'd expect, and what, it sounds ridiculous to talk like that about a first round pick, but that's another conversation, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, there was a really good point made on the radio that I was listening to Softy this morning, and he said that, you know, Pete Carroll is the ultimate player's coach in the sense that, you know, he will support his players at all times, you know, back him up against the wall, you know, he will support them unreservedly until he won't, and then they're gone. Yeah. And Carson could be the kind of guy that finds himself in a position where right now he's getting all the support and all the love. But again, you know, one more mistake and he's going to be in big trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's been good since he got here, but at the same time, he was a 7th round pick. And maybe this is, what was it, the 6th round pick. This is maybe the reasons we're seeing why he lasted so long. There's so many questions around the league because I think it was an issue for him. Oklahoma State. Elsewhere, offensive line was offensive line. It can be, but again, for me, I don't know what you took from the bits you saw, Adam, but it's those middle three more than the two guys on the outside, isn't it?
Well, we missed the podcast last week, and arguably the defeat was our fault as a result of that. But it's worth saying that the Steelers game, you know, the memes were out in force against Jermaine Ifedi, weren't they? You know, you couldn't move for a holding 65 jersey on the Facebook group or a this or a that. DJ Fluka was so much worse than Ifedi against the Steelers. He was like a revolving door, and he's not getting better. And, you know, there's a reason why New York let him go, because in the past game, he is a passenger at best. And that needs to change. And, you know, Ifedi's a real popular, you know, look, it happens in all sports teams. One player A is popular with the supporters, and so he can do no wrong. Player B is not popular, so he can do no right. But at this stage, you know, that right side is not good, but it's just as much because of the guy inside as it is the guy outside. And that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, and I think it all goes back to the guy even further inside, Justin Britt. I mean, he's the one who controls the line alongside Russell Wilson. It's clearly something not going right for him. And if there's, I think, don't know who it was, someone on Twitter has posted clips of the Rams rookie center, and it's just like, I mean, they've just had a complete comfortable transition from a guy retiring to their rookie just sliding. I think he's a rookie. Sliding in, and there's just no drop off in production, and they're still getting all the yards. I mean, Carson's fumbling the ball, but also he's not getting massive running lanes because the O line, particularly down the middle, is not doing their job. I mean, on the left side, there could be an issue coming around because, I mean, Dwayne Brown is old, for lack of a better term, but if Eddie's just an easy target, a scapegoat for when you actually watch and look into what is going wrong, it's him inside, isn't it? As you say, with Fluka, is just, I mean, the Steelers game is an abomination. I mean, if he got cut on Monday morning, it probably wouldn't have been too much of a shock with it.
No, and look, let's not pretend that Ifedi has played particularly well, because he hasn't, but as much of it has been on the guy inside him, on that line, as it has been on him, and that needs to change.
Yeah, it does. On the defensive side, though, of the ball, they didn't give up a lot of yards. They kind of kept Michael Thomas for the most part quiet, and Teddy Bridgewater maintained. They didn't get to Teddy Bridgewater at all, I don't think. But as it has been the case for so long, Adam, Bobby Wagner finished with 19 tackles and KJ Wright with 12, but it's KJ Wright who kind of looks like whatever operations and procedures he's had over the last 18 months he's seen the fruits of those arduous experiences this year, because he flashed again at times on Sunday.
Yeah, we had a bit of a disagreement about that last play that ended up basically being giving them a touchdown with the pass interference, but he continues to be plugged into coverage where may not be the best situation for him. But the tackling, I guess when it comes to a Seattle team, if they're going to miss tackles, it's probably the best way to lose, because you would assume that the team would be able to bounce back from that pretty quickly. Like, that is such a team fundamental that you would hope that that's just an aberration, in kind of just a day of aberrations. So hopefully that would sort itself out. But yeah, I mean, yeah, they are very, very keen on this base defense, and going to nickel as rarely as possible. I don't know the stats, but I would imagine they go to nickel fewer than most other teams in the league at the moment.
It doesn't seem like they are. I mean, Jamal Taylor didn't pop off the screen much, if at all, on Sunday.
Well, I mean, I don't know who the nickel cornerback is.
I think it's Jamal Taylor.
But if you think, like, how famous, in a way, like Justin Coleman was last year, like, he was known as, like, part of the almost the base defense, in a way. But right now they're really keen on keeping those three guys on the field, and I'm not entirely convinced it's been that successful when it comes to obvious passing downs, to be honest.
No, and also that's going to be tested massively with how Kyler Murray and the Cardinals attack teams by spreading it all out in the air raid offense. It could be interesting how they line up on the defensive side of the ball, because it's going to be a challenge if they just stick to what they do every other week this week. But yeah, it's just, I think I've tweeted it every week this week, but it's weird how often a play from the opposing team just ends as soon as it gets in the area of Bobby Wagner. It doesn't, like, he gets an extra couple of yards, the play just stops.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous to watch. I mean, even like Luke Kuechly, you see get dragged for a couple of yards here and there, but Bobby Wagner just ends it. It's really weird. And at the same time as anything else on the offensive side of the ball with Russell Wilson, I mean, he is streaks ahead of every other defensive player at this moment, isn't he?
Oh, I mean, he is the person that if he went down, God knows what would happen to that team.
Yeah, and another week, although he just shows signs of becoming what we have seen him do in his previous stop, Clowney's slowly getting there, isn't he? I mean, he was quiet on the stat sheet again, but he's going to be fun when the sea legs have been banished, Adam.
Do you think he, you know, we discussed for a long time ago that, you know, Averill and Bennett were very much role players, and if they were in another situation, they'd be able to, you know, really rack up the sacks number. When you watch him, and you've got a keener eye on this than I have, when you watch him, do you see a guy that is nearly getting home and just not quite ready yet? Or is this just another like example of a Seahawks defensive end not quite being given the tools and like the freedom to just express himself by knocking people's heads off every play?
Yeah, I think like this week was the most we've seen Clowney. I think answered. Moment, just scroll down. Ziggy.
18 plays for Ansah.
Ziggy Ansah only had 18 plays, where Clowney had 35. You'd expect those to get up, especially Clowney. You'd expect Ansah to be close to 35, and you'd expect Clowney to be at least above 75% of defensive players on Sunday, because they're going to have to try and get Murray in some form or another, him and Jefferson this week. But yeah, he just seems, you kind of just see it week on week. I mean, the first week was just ridiculously fun because you just spotted him immediately and he was just ridiculous to watch. And then against Pittsburgh, he was a little quieter, but I think the Saints game kind of, it showed what that defensive line could be with him, Jefferson, Puna Ford, and Rasheem Green really did show those Michael Bennett type plays on a couple occasions, but just didn't come away with the notch on the stat sheet. So it's a definite work in progress, but it kind of needed to be there quicker.
My hottest of hot takes is that Ziggy Ansah doesn't last a season on the roster.
I don't think that's that hot, to be fair. It kind of feels somewhat similar to a Dwight Freeney situation. There's some weird decisions going on. I think the fact that Aljay Collier was a healthy and active on Sunday is slightly concerning. When Ziggy Ansah just gets 18 plays, I mean, surely those 18 players would be better off going to your rookie first round pick, Adam.
Well, I mean, the drafting thing has been something that's come up quite a bit on social media this week. And if you look at those last six draft classes, it is, it's just as well John Schneider is very good at trading and managing the cap.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the drafting has been, there's been two Pro Bowlers in 7 years.
Yeah.
Now, in fairness, I don't know how that relates to many other teams, but, you know, one of them's a punter.
Yeah, I think the Seahawks over the past 5 or 6 years, and other people have pointed this out, have been in a position where they've been successful enough not to get those stud players. I mean, I know last year they traded out and missed out on Derwin James, which in this defense this year, although he's injured, would have been ridiculous amounts of fun. I mean, look at Chargers defense without him, it kind of shows that. But I think apart from that, they haven't, I mean, they've been trading after 21 probably every year since 2012.
I mean, like the third round is full of good players if you know how to spot them. Like it's not necessarily the blue chip players that but like players like George Kittle, for example, who like just breeze past us 3 or 4 times in the draft, and you know, Juju, and you know, just players like that. I don't know. We just, I was hearing on the radio them saying, you know, now they got the extra 5th round pick for Nick Vannett. Yeah, it's great news, but like, so what? If they're going to use it in the draft, it's probably going to be a bust.
Yeah, but at the same time, Shaquille Griffin was a 3rd round pick. Quentin Jefferson was a 5th round pick. Puna Ford was undrafted. I mean, yeah, the instant returns on the hype. I mean, Marquise Blair and Aljay Collier, I mean, Marquise Blair had 4 defensive snaps on Sunday.
And that's your first and second round pick there.
Yeah, but then there is a Shaquille. There's going to be a player emerge from this class who isn't named DK Metcalf. I've no idea who that's going to be at this point, but it's not great, but I think at the same time, when they were drafting well, it's because there were so many holes on this team. And this really was the first draft class where that was the case again, I think.
Yeah, that's probably fair. And, you know, you've got to give these guys time. But I don't know, it's just frustrating that in addition to not having the splashy offensive players, we don't really have like the rookies that you can really get that excited about just yet. I don't know. It's I'm struggling with my view or my opinion that like I want this season to be fun.
Most
it's not been that fun.
Most definitely.
Yet.
I mean, if the Pittsburgh San Francisco game was any better, I think I'd probably watch that in the second half instead of the Seahawks game on Sunday. But that was somehow even worse. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo was fumbling or throwing interceptions every time I looked up to the TV screen, but yet they still managed to win that game. It's not fun, but there is one thing I did want to bring up on that. Obviously, we're definitely not in Brian Schottenheimer's camp, but as we saw with all those late fourth quarter touchdowns from Russell Wilson, he's clearly got plans and plays in his back pocket. So is any blame that he should get, should that be aimed another rung up the ladder, do you think, or is that putting too much on Pete Carroll? Because I mean, for him to do what he did in that fourth quarter, scoring three touchdowns in, I mean, they had the ball at least three times, the Saints, so to score probably like 6-7 minutes there's clearly scheming there which works against NFL defenses. I know the prevent defenses are probably an asterisk to that, but the fact that it is there, it kind of is a feather in his cap, no matter how reluctantly I may praise him on that, Adam.
I think you have to look up a level to Pete Carroll. You know, his whole thing is, you know, keep it tight, get the run game going, establish play action, which we know from the guests we've had on here and people that, you know, deal with the data analytics like that. Those are already debunked myths, but that's not the way that Seattle want to play, and they want to, you know, go with the older school style. So, you know, I don't think Brian Schottenheimer is the most inventive of human beings out there, and I'm sure there are a lot of better offensive coordinators out there. However, he does show flashes of knowing, you know, how to, you know, make an explosive play and get a team going. But I feel he's probably constrained by, yeah, the head coach more than his own inability.
Yeah, it's just another weird cocktail. One name you mentioned, obviously talking about Pro Bowl and draft picks, Michael Dixon. He's a bit of an issue, isn't he? I mean, 4 punts, 41.3-yard average when you compare to Thomas Morstead, who was punting it to Spokane every time he got hold of the ball. The field position is another part of the mantra or approach to Pete Carroll has to this game and this team, and the fact that their guy was flipping the field. I mean, I think their longest touchdown drive on Sunday was only about 25, 30 yards, and that doesn't help when the punter is not at his best, Adam. Obviously, he got praised to high heaven last year, but there's similar to Chris Carson, there might be cause for concern if it is a thing that continues and he keeps kicking him below 45 yards every week.
I've always thought that the idea that there are three phases of the game is over-exaggerating the importance of special teams. And, you know, I think that it's another kind of Seahawky trope that it's such an important thing. And obviously it is important, but I don't know. I feel like the punt is going to have a bad game sometimes, and it's never going to be, you know, you don't lose a game because your punt has a bad game, in my opinion. Obviously he didn't, he's not quite, but he is a high ceiling, low floor guy. And I think that was probably the risk when he was drafted, wasn't he? Like, you know, that they knew he was either going to be, you know, do amazing things. And he's, you know, he's got the outside of the foot punt and he can make the ball do crazy things. But he also last year had a few punts where you look at him and just think, what on earth was that?
I mean, it is definitely spitting hairs a little bit, but there is, I mean, for how high he was praised for certain things last year, there's the same point where he is possibly being a bit of a minor, in comparison context to everything else, issue, for me anyway.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah, for sure. Right. Yeah, so that's week three. That with the Seahawks are 2-1. They didn't get their first 3-0 start since 2013 season on Sunday, but now they open up their NFC West, well, back-to-back NFC West games, first on the road in Arizona. So let's move on to
that. Now, as opposed to when the Saints had the ball.
Goes in motion right to left. Turn and handle into it.
Oh, look at this one.
Finds a little bit of a hole. Keeps his legs moving. He's across the 40. Midfield. 45. He's on the run, Lynch.
What a run. Marshawn Lynch. Still on his feet.
The man, 35. Look at him go. He's down to 20. 15. He could go. He is going to go.
Has blockers now. He's dancing his way for the touchdown.
Touchdown, Seahawks. Oh, my word.
Good an effort as I've ever seen in my life from a running back who they traded for from Buffalo. Downhill, physical.
A 67-yard run. Marshawn Lynch, unbelievable. He must have knocked five guys down on the way to the end zone. The beast is alive and well.
He breaks the tackle of Shanley. Runs through Sharper. Runs through Adell. Runs through Jabari Greer. Get off me, he says to Tracy Ford. Are you kidding me?
So after the horror show that was most of Sunday night against the Saints, the Seahawks now move on and face a rookie, the number one pick for the first time in his career, and obviously a new NFL coach for Pete Carroll to come up against in Cliff Kingsbury, and his offense, which isn't firing yet on all cylinders, but Kyler Murray has shown glimpses for being the reason they paid the price they paid to get him and farm off Josh Rosen to the dog farm that is the Dolphins, Adam.
I think this is more of a trap game than we're making out.
Yeah.
I'm slightly concerned that this could be a bit of a problem. You know, Murray's going to sling it around all over the place with reckless abandon, and that may mean good things for us, but we're not as much of a takeaway defense as we used to be. Larry Fitz is still out there, you know, getting open, dominating defensive backs, and still looking like he's got another 10 years in the league if he wants it. And I don't know, considering we're not the kind of team that's going to blow another team out and, you know, be 20 points up at halftime, you wouldn't have thought. I'm just a bit worried that we might end up losing a close one because we just kind of forget that, like, the game's close to being over, if that makes sense.
Yeah, this game comes down, I mean, it's ridiculous, it still comes down. It comes down to Kyler Murray, Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson. If you stop two of them, the Steelers are probably going to win. But as you say, this defense doesn't... I mean, he's thrown three interceptions, I think. Yeah, three interceptions and four touchdowns in three games. But he's also thrown at just over 60% completion, 800 yards. He's 6 yards an attempt. I mean, this is, like I say, it's another of those uncomfortable cocktails for this Seahawks defense as they've looked through 3 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, I really, you know, don't. I was more optimistic about the Saints than I am about this one. I mean, I was supremely confident about the Saints, and I'm only mildly I'm pretty confident about this week. But you know, it's the all-time cursed stadium, as we all know, and that can never be ignored. I don't care what the coaches want to say. You know, they have to you know, pretend that this stuff doesn't matter, but this stuff does matter. It's the ultimate cursed stadium. Something shit always happens down there. And I don't know, I just always assume that something horrendous is going to happen.
I mean, it's exactly a year since we played there last year. And obviously, I was there. As I've said to you on here and in private conversations, I've never been more frustrated as I was at that game last year. Mainly for the fact that when I saw Chris Carson wasn't playing, I picked up Rashad Penny, then Mike Davis got the ball every down. But that was a fantasy thing. It was immensely frustrating. Obviously, last year was the last time we saw Earl Thomas on the field in a Seahawks uniform. Obviously, he flipped off everyone, or certain people on the Seahawks sideline on his way off. But it's worth saying
that Glendale ended the dynasty.
It ended
Sherman, Chancellor and Thomas's careers in Seattle. Like, it is
yeah.
uber cursed.
And it probably ended Marshawn Lynch finishing his career in Seattle as well, because obviously Super Bowl 49 happened in that stadium.
Yeah, well, that's why when I say the dynasty.
Yeah,
that was it.
Yeah, I mean, and also it also ended all of our hopes and dreams when it was it 25-6 in the morning and it finished 6-6. That was also.
Do not get me started about that overtime. Out of goodness.
That was, oh man, 6-6. That was only 3 years ago. It's just another one. It's like, I think if the Seahawks had won against the Saints as they did against the Steelers, I think I'd be hella confident. But because they did what they did on Sunday, and because this offense is going to attack the Seahawks defense in ways which just sit uncomfortably. I mean, they're just going to have five wide every time. David Johnson's probably going to spend next to no time in the backfield. I mean, he's had 13 catches in three games. I mean, that's only four a game, but when you're struggling and David Johnson, Christian Kirk, Larry Fitzgerald. The only thing is, after that, there's not a lot. They've released Michael Crabtree this week. They've got all the rebuilds at tight end, but just how they attack, and there's nothing from, apart from Shaquille Griffin and Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, and the back side of the defense, there's nothing that I've seen through 3 weeks which kind of has me sitting comfortably about this game. And how, I mean, because it's going to click with Kyler Murray eventually, isn't it? I mean, he showed
for sure.
Alive with six yards doing everything, but it's just the most Cov thing ever that it would be this week.
Yeah, I mean, our friend Mike Dugar often tweets out that Seahawks are going for it on fourth and YOLO. And, like, the Cardinals with Kingsbury just live in YOLO. And I respect it. I really respect it.
Just think about the fact that they traded away their first-round pick after 1 year for a guy, for their new head coach, and I don't care what they say, the main reason is because he blew smoke up his quarterback's ass in preparation for a game last season. That's the only reason they traded for him, is because he made a throwaway comment, and the internet being the internet, kind of held him to it in some weird way, and Steve Keim, somehow still being employed in the NFL, let him do it. I mean, that is a weirdly large part of why Kyler Murray's in Arizona, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Kingsbury kind of backed himself into a corner which he couldn't get out of.
I mean, why did he have to stick to it? He said it, like, in a completely different situation.
That said, Josh Rosen's probably not his prototype of a quarterback.
No, that is true. But, yeah. But, yeah, the comment is spot on. It is kind of, it's just going to be, like what we saw with what I was worried Peyton was going to do. This is what Kingsbury is definitely going to do, because he's pretty much going to got a one-track mind for that shit, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But offensively, I mean, this defense, I mean, it's got some familiar names. Adam Budabaker, Byron Murphy, Terrell Suggs apparently is now in Arizona, but Chandler Jones is going to be the main point of focus for the means, most probably, on Sunday evening, but he's the main one, maybe along with Buddha, who they're going to have to try and keep quiet.
I'm not sure there's a guy in the league that's had more of like a target on Russell Wilson's back than Chandler Jones. He just seems to be an animal against us every time we play, and just there's always like a tomahawk chop on Wilson's arm that I think is going to break him in 17 pieces. He's just a terrifying human being.
Yeah, they have some random names on their defense. Cassius Marsh is there, apparently.
Marcus Golden, always amazing against us.
Doesn't seem to be a human being this year because he's not on their stat sheet.
Ah, maybe he moved.
Yeah.
Well, it's lucky for us because he's always amazing against us.
Yeah, Chandler Jones has 3 sacks in 3 games and three forced fumbles. Oh, no, there he is. Yeah, 3 forced fumbles and 3 sacks. That tomahawk chop is... The juices are flaring in that, isn't there? Just in time, Adam.
Golden plays for the Giants. Who would have thought?
But yeah, that's probably why I paid no attention to him. but Buda Baker and Byron Murphy, I mean, like Taylor Rapp's in, and Greg Gaines are in LA with the Rams. This is the annoying part of following the college team more than most, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, a bit of a shame you have to play against some of your old favourites, but Buda's been, it's great to see that all those defensive backs are doing so well all of a sudden, because there was a time where you just wondered whether those Husky players were kind of good college players but not great pros. But I think that's just shifting slightly now, which is great to see.
Yeah, I think Buda Baker is brilliant. I love watching Buda Baker play. I've watched their game. It might be in the Lions game. He was everywhere, flying around like he did, and he's kind of took on from the old Cougar player who I can't remember, Buchanan. He kind of took over from him last year. I will put myself in the bin if this comes back to bite me. I apologise from the start for this, Adam, because I know what you're like with
Kirk. If this is a jinx.
There's a very good chance it's going to be a jinx. You talk about the Seahawks getting their hands on the ball. The Cardinals are yet to get their hands on the ball in an interception through 3 weeks. So there is the jinx. I take full responsibility and blame for that if it comes back around sourly on Sunday evening, Adam.
You're the worst human being I've ever met.
Yeah. Not the first time I've heard that, which is probably someone that should probably visit. Confidence, prediction, Adam. Well, no. One to watch for the Seahawks on offense if this team is going to be good, and I won't accept Russell Wilson as an answer.
We'll have to go with, I think Penny's going to play a lot if he's healthy. So, yeah, Penny for me. I think it'll be split carries this week.
But I think that could be one. Defensively, for me, you kind of want to see something from those two safeties, whoever they are, because, as we said, they're going to throw it and launch it deep often and early, even to the old man, Larry Fitzgerald, who is one of my favourite non-Seahawks players in the league and is just still doing ridiculous things. I think those two safeties are going to be tested quite readily by this offence. So whoever the two starting safeties, McDougal, Tedrick, or whoever else, kind of want to see something from them. For me, Adam, defensive one.
I want to see Jadeveon Clowney break someone in half this week.
You want to see Clowney do what Chandler Jones has done.
Exactly.
Yeah. Prediction, Adam?
Ooh, I'm going to go 27-24 Seahawks.
I'm going to go 19-16 Seahawks.
Okay.
No conviction like on it. That, but yeah, that's what I'm going to go. It's been a bad day. Please don't take a picture. It's been a bad day. Please. Anything other NFL stuff? Obviously, Antonio Brown is still in the news for being a complete donut, to put it lightly. And I will admit, I was probably wrong that he was working us all with everything that's come out, and he's no longer, doesn't appear, he's going to be back in the NFL anytime soon, either, does it, Adam?
No, I mean, I think I was going to do my good week four and bad week four. I think Antonio Brown is probably in rather on the bad week and bad month four, because I can't imagine he's going to play another snap in the NFL.
No, and yeah, no, it's quite, in some ways, it's quite sad and quite alarming what is happening with him. I mean, it's Twitter storm just before we start recording is just flat out bizarre. But
have you got someone that you got a good fortnight for as we missed a podcast? I've got one.
Good fortnight. Yeah, you go on while I have a think.
I'm going to go with Eli Manning, believe it or not. I think that they've kind of, you know, they've taken him out of the firing line just before he was going to become a full on meme. It was time probably 2 years ago for this to happen, but I kind of feel that he leaves just about his dignity intact. He hasn't got a losing record. And I think that kind of little fist bump to Daniel Jones, on Sunday after he won, it was just, I think people are going to think favorably about Eli by the end of the season again, and he'll be a liked person. Whereas I think if he'd been playing in that team for the year, it could have been all sorts of carnage. So I think in a way, despite the fact that he's kind of had his career rug pulled from underneath him, it's kind of been a good fortnight for him and his legacy going forward.
Yeah, I mean, the way he's dealt with it has been exemplary.
He's really a class act.
Yeah, he's. I mean, I know he's been a massive debate. I don't really get into it at this point of the evening now, but Eli Manning is going to go in the Hall of Fame. You don't win two Super Bowls on the teams he won two Super Bowls on and not go in the Hall of Fame when you see some of the names who are in the queue ahead of him almost. But yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. He's not been great for a number of years, as you say, but also the team around him, bar Odell Beckham and obviously 14 weeks last year of Saquon Barkley, the team hasn't been put around him really even less so than the two Super Bowl winning teams were. I mean, the first one with Strahan and all Umanyora was ridiculously stacked on defense, but the offense has always kind of been a bit of a struggle for Eli. But yeah, how he's dealt with everything has been ridiculous, and that was pretty cool to see Daniel Jones pull that win out, how he did, although I'll get into the other side of that. A good week for me. I think it's a good fortnight for Jacoby Brissett and the Colts, because, I mean, they handled somewhat comfortably, although it didn't, if you read the box score like the Seahawks game, it doesn't read so comfortably. I mean, it's 3 weeks in and there's absolute no question that he's their starting quarterback. There's no quarterback issue in Indianapolis. One reason, because they got the running game going, but also because T.Y. Hilton is still ridiculous. Paris Campbell's showing signs of life. And I say Marlon Mack and Wilkins and Naheem Hines, that running attack is really helping him out. But Jacoby Brissett looks like a more than serviceable, someone you can kind of give the reins to for a couple of years and maybe not put the pressure on selecting a quarterback at the earliest opportunity that other teams in that division and in the NFL have. I think Jacoby Brissett, especially last week against the Colts, is really showing signs. But also at the same time, big props probably does have to go to Frank Reich and for scheming that offense for him. But yeah, good week for him, or good fortnight for him. Bad week or bad fortnight, Adam?
It's a bad fortnight for the NFL with what the Miami Dolphins are doing. Because this is just first things first, you don't need to tank to this level to get good again.
No. Because, I mean, it's not a slam dunk that Tua comes out.
No, there's that. And B, the people that they're giving all these draft picks to are the ones that have had the draft picks for the last 4 or 5 years and put them in this awful situation of being horrific. And the point differential of 133 or something after three games, like, that's like expansion team bullshit.
Yeah, it is.
I just think that for the whole integrity of the league, which is built upon draft and cap and relies on everyone trying to win at all times, that kind of partnering with the players holding out and whatever, I don't know, I just see a real sea change in the league now, of which doesn't fill me with too much joy.
No. Yeah. It's I mean, they kind of hung around with the Cowboys for the first half on Sunday, didn't they?
Briefly. I mean, but they're dropping passes in the end zone because they're just shit players.
Yeah. That's fair. Yeah, it's not great and it's not going to improve any. I still see them sneaking out a couple of wins because there's equally terrible teams. I mean, Steelers against the Niners is just not enjoyable. I've actually forgot who I was going to put my bad week on. I completely forgot. So
should we get straight to the bin?
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
First, because the guy well, just mentioned briefly, I want to put in the bin this week is Bruce Arians. We talked about Daniel Jones getting that. It's kind of just because this bit of banter, really, because Daniel Jones got the win in Tampa Bay after leading to 18-point deficit late down in Tampa Bay, but the Tampa Bay Buccaneers should have won the game. But it all kind of, it's micromanaging and overthinking things, and Bruce Arians overthought that end sequence. He took a delay of game five to push the team back 5 yards deliberately because he thought it was a better distance for his kicker, and then his kicker missed. I mean, what, you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you need, in the division where you got the Falcons, you'd expect are going to get it right eventually. The Saints, I mean, after escaping Seattle with a win last week, are probably going to be positioned to be a good team. You kind of need every little win you can get, and while it is kind of like a better story that the Giants went down there, you had that win sealed up, and it wasn't through mistakes that Winston made, it was just a cataclysmically overthinking, too brash almost, coach, and Bruce Arians can get in the bin for that, because it's just, yeah, that team is better than their record shows, I think. I think they showed that more. They showed more what they're going to be this year against the Panthers than they did against the Giants.
Interesting. Well, my bin, Bill Belichick deserves to go in for his Dana Jacobson stare out, which I thought was pretty poor. But 2 weeks ago, Tim Tebow maybe is one of the all-time biggest bins required for this white privilege clown. Just awful comments about college players not needing to be paid. And no one's asking for college players to become millionaires overnight, but just the lack of awareness in his comments were just startling. And get in the bin, Tim Tebow.
Although they weren't that startling at the same time, Tim Tebow. I mean, that's
what's very true.
I mean, the reason he's a talking head is because he's Tim Tebow. Like, he had a good college career. I mean, if there hasn't been one made, I want Billy Corbin to make a 30 for 30 about that Florida team, because there are some characters in that. Tim Tebow, Aaron Hernandez, Riley Cooper are all in that Florida team. Urban Meyer was their coach. I mean, that's like a 17-part 30 for 30. But like but then he kind of lived off that. He's in a Major League Baseball's farm system because of his name, because of the name recognition and the way he sold his name when he got to the league. But the reason he got to the league is because he was putting his name around and every envelope opening and doing this and doing that just to get attention, and he made money off it. So the fact that he said what he did about other people who were in the situation he was, 10 years ago, it was just, yeah, if we were doing a podcast, he'd have been in the bin. I think I'd have put him in the bin at the start of the podcast, I think we'd have spent all last week's podcast. It's just incredible comments. But at the same time, Pete Carroll kind of supported it a little bit, didn't he?
Yeah, Pete Carroll the worst, but we kind of know that.
Much
as we love him.
Yeah, there is other things and I want to put in the bin, but I don't really want to start that fire, so let's
move on.
You shouldn't have to think too hard about who the items will go in the bin this week. Anything else? College ball, I mean, the Huskies did well. I mean, that BYU stadium, I think that jumped on my list of places I want to go. It looked incredible, that setting for that game.
It did, and I'm very excited about the game against USC on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, and also we are seeing. There's another thing for getting in a bin. I want to put the Slate newspaper or magazine from Columbia, South Carolina, in, whose headline on, if not Sunday morning, Monday morning, was Helinski's Hope Sinks. I mean, after the South Carolina Gamecocks lost,
that was disgusting.
Was completely shut down in Missouri. It's just. I mean, the Slate is the local Columbia newspaper. It covers the team pretty closely, I think, for what is a pretty small town in South Carolina. It is South Carolina, as we've seen with Jalen Clowney. It's just that, I mean, the fact that that was allowed to happen, I think the way the family and people and the school as well, and the wider college football and every general public reacted to that is right. And it's just, as I tweeted, it's fucking trash, bro. It's just, it's not good. Also, because well, Ron Hinsker, he's swinging that ball, his arm is live, and that is going to be fun to watch over the next few years. One other note also, I mean, she probably won't listen to the podcast, but our pal Jessamyn McIntyre is now the producer of the morning show on 710 ESPN, Adam. I mean, when you
wonderful news.
I mean, let's think about it. We get Jessamyn on the podcast. She's now producer of the morning show. Mike Dugar went from, was it PI to the Athletic, and now he's rolling in Arizona and Atlanta ladies of the nightclubs, Adam.
I think it's obvious to say that the Pedestrian Podcast is the gateway to true success.
For everyone apart from the host.
Exactly, yes.
But yeah, if you want to get involved, I think that is everything, isn't it? I don't think there's anything else.
I think we've covered it all.
Yeah, if you want to get involved with the podcast, you can, and we do encourage you to. If he is listening to this, a massive congratulations and good luck to one of our listeners, Adam, Kieran Byrne, who is sailing on a boat. He's on the Thames somewhere for the next week. He's going to Cannes in France. My pronunciations of everything, as Adam always points out, is not great. And he's on the boat for a week, and he's doing all that as a fundraising effort for one of the chapters charities over the last few years, the SSAFA. So that's a pretty cool thing he's doing, and we wish him all the best and hope he gets back ashore safely. And I'm sure Manners will be in his near future, because I think he's in Seattle in 3 weeks when yours truly is on, but that's pretty cool, isn't it? I mean, I wouldn't even know sailing a sailboat like he is the thing you could do in 2019, but it's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck to him.
Yeah, so if you want to get involved, you can on all the usual means. The Pedestrian Podcast on Facebook, UK Seattle Seahawks fans on Facebook, at Seahawkers UK. We do kind of want to get that follow account up and above and raise that profile of that. And on Instagram, at UK Seahawkers. The podcast, every podcast is available on Podbean and Spotify and iTunes. Just search for the Pedestrian Podcast on all those apps and gizmos that those platforms all come with. But yeah, until next time, enjoy the game against the Arizona Cardinals, and it's a quick turnaround for the Rams on Thursday night football 4 days later, which is a whole heap of trouble I'm expecting. But until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
Things, everything, you know, the birthday, 100th win, who he is as a coach, his energy. You know, we just wanted to show him that we was thinking about him, and we understand how much work he put in to help us kind of get where we want to be. And, you know, if you watch him and see he's 68 years old, he does not look it one bit, does not move around like that one bit. He actually kind of hit me on the sideline a little bit, kind of felt a little power. So, you know, he doesn't act 68.